welcome to another edition of Visions with me, Yudalee Wickham Ashby. And today I have a very special guest, a warm and lovely lady hailing from Tobago. Her name is Rhea Carrera Tony. She's a lady who has a neurodivergent disability. And today we'll be chatting all about that and really getting to learn about this wonderful lady and her contribution to her community and to her country. Welcome to Visions, Rhea.
Hi, thank you for having me. Good morning from Tobago.
Okay, so Rhea, let's start by asking you to share, you know, a little about your neurodivergent identity. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a bit about it, please?
Okay, so I was actually diagnosed at the age of maybe 28, so pretty much late in life. I have a learning disability and also on the autism spectrum. I have that little mix of ADHD. I call it the saucy pot of neurodiversity.
Uh-huh.
That's how I call it. It's a saucy pot of different things mixed together. Yeah.
Okay. Well, how would you say growing up in Tobago has shaped your image of, you know, the neurodivergent disability?
Well, actually, I grew up in Trinidad. I moved to Tobago within the last 10 years, but the experience is pretty much the same on both islands. We are twin islands. For my entire childhood, the comment was always, she bright, you know, but she don't focus on her schoolwork. She bright, you know, she need to settle down. And my mother was a school teacher and she didn't even pick it up either, right? It's only when I got to postgraduate school at the Institute of International Relations at the university campus that a professor there picked up a difference. And he called me to his office and he said, your mouth in my class is not the same person that wrote this paper. And he showed me the paper and the grammatical errors, the spelling mistakes. You know, he was one of those old school professors that would use a red pen
on
every single page. In my mind, it looked as though the entire thing was just a red pen. So it scared me a lot, especially at the time I was in postgraduate school and wanted to do my PhD. I couldn't even spell the word dyslexia to research what was dyslexia. So my friends in postgraduate school had to help me spell it. And I found an educational psychologist to have a proper assessment done. So I did an IQ test, an academic assessment test, and that is where I got my official diagnosis.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what does this mean to you personally to be labeled or to be identified as, you know, having a disability?
For me, in my personal life, because of the autism part of the spectrum, sensory overload is a major thing. Light, sound, sometimes inconsistent, noise can seem very painful. A lot of persons don't know this as well. I can't hear certain things at certain tones. I can't hear when people speak. So it's very enclosed, isolated, kind of quiet space when I'm by myself. In terms of interacting with others, most people tend not to believe that I am neurodivergent. Apparently, I'm too articulate, I'm too aware of my thoughts, and in their minds, I don't come across like I have some disabling situation happening with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be due to all the years of coping on masking, where I sort of kind of developed the skills where I know how to hide it for the most part from others, while internally, there's a lot of struggle on the
Yeah. So what are some of those struggles?
So like a simple one, I was at a two-day meeting recently and I need this entire day just to be alone, to be able to decompress. Also because of the part of the spectrum, the autism spectrum, I can't process as quickly. I know like sometimes after things, people ask me, well, how the day went? What do you think? I need 2 or 3 days to sort of process and put my thoughts together. That affects you a lot in academia, especially when you have time tests and so forth. That definitely is a major problem. gosh, you're making me think about these things now. I almost feel to cry.
Okay.
Almost feel to cry.
Right.
For me, it shows up a lot, and I still don't have the ability to spell, which is very interesting because I actually have 6 degrees. I have 6 degrees. I've struggled through academia, and I think it's related to the trauma of being called you're bright, but you're wild. You know, like I overdid academia after that. Because for me, yeah, based on my diagnosis, postgraduate school would have been easier for me because I'm an abstract thinker. It's an interesting thing. I cannot spell, but I can understand metaphysics. I can understand the PhD topics. I can understand the ideas that they try to communicate at postgraduate school.
Right.
Yeah. So that part is easy for me. Ask me to spell sacred, I really can't.
Okay. Yeah. So would you say that you have experienced a lot of stigma from your community or even your family?
I won't say it's a lot because it's what we consider one of those invisible disabilities. So unless somebody speaks to me and I bring it up, they really can't tell what's happening with me. For those that are aware, when my mother, again, I told you my mother was a school teacher. When I came to her with my diagnosis, being, I guess, from the Caribbean, and you know, she told me from a religious point of view, you know, rebuke that. Don't call that upon yourself. Mm-hmm. You know? So I had that to deal with. It took her a long time. I guess when she had time to sit and process, she kind of put together, yeah, you know, there were some things that you did as a child that I didn't really pay attention to. But if I did, I can see where this diagnosis is a real thing. And that has been the challenge because it's not visible. And I'm not what you would typically see portrayed on television.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's almost a mismatch in other person's minds. So a lot of the times I have to self-advocate. That is what led me to self-advocacy, actually, and advocating others. Yeah.
Right. So how would you say your self-advocacy has helped you in life generally?
It helped me a lot because to begin to self-advocate, you have to know thyself. And that was the starting point, understanding how I was different, doing my research, trying to understand how my brain worked, why it worked differently, why things were issues for me that were not for others. And in understanding that, the next step became, well, all right, how do I explain this to people, especially the persons that have to interact with me almost on a daily basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first time I tried to explain it, I didn't explain it that great. Then I tried again. And I started to get better at doing it. But one thing about us on the spectrum, we have a high sense of justice and injustice. So I was always driven by, okay, who is coming after me? And am I preparing or helping prepare the way to make it easier for them?
Right.
You know, so sometimes I may feel demotivated and don't really want to bother in a situation. So even in interacting with universities, like I don't really want to bother to ask for the so-called special accommodation, you know, but gosh, the next person that comes after me may find it difficult. So let me just, you know, let me take the initial brunt of the person asking for the change so it's easier for those behind me. And that's sort of how I started to advocate, and now, after a couple of years of doing that, the people close in my life, they understand me a lot better. When I get quiet, when I'm having sensory overload, when I say I need to leave, even when I'm having, I call it the autism eruption. Sometimes we erupt when we're overstimulated and there is almost no calming us down. You just sort of have to let it erupt.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they even give me grace and space to be able to do that.
Excellent, excellent.
In terms of your working life, it has been a challenge because I did a lot of, interestingly, brain work. And sometimes having to explain why I'm unable to do a task to my supervisors didn't go over that great. Because, you know, we live in a culture, do, 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 and figure out how to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I would try because I'm accustomed struggling and trying and overcoming. And then when I hit a wall, I was like, no, I can't do this. It is difficult for them to accept that. And they would keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing. It almost was like psychological violence and being attacked. And then I couldn't even go to HR because HR in our region is not even too aware of neurodiverse employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. As you talk about that, what type of supports then would you say are really needed to help persons like yourself who are neurodivergent or have other types of learning disabilities?
All right. So actually what I did most recently, I became certified as a neurodivergent and inclusion trainee trainer with the UK Psychology Academy.
Mm-hmm. And
what I did was focused on workspaces, right? So one of the things is some of us have light sensitivity. So you may have a coworker that keeps complaining about the lights in the room. It's as simple as putting them in a darker space in the office. You may find and have a coworker that is always complaining that it's cold and nobody else is cold. Even being aware that people on the spectrum sometimes are very aware of how things feel and how things touch. They're more sensitive to temperature. So even allowing them to wear, it may go against your dress code, but a sweater, socks, like simple things. For me, I have an issue with certain colors. So, you know, in offices, we like to have these yellow post-its
mm-hmm.
or these Milner folders. It's kind of cream-colored Milner folders. I see those colors and I just feel rage every single time. And I couldn't understand it before I was diagnosed. So what I did when I realized it was happening, I actually called the stationery department at work.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them to just bring different colors.
Right. Okay.
You know, so I didn't have to see the yellow and I didn't have to see the Milner. And from that, they started to get blues and pinks. I was glad. And then the office was glad because they got different options to pick. And, you know, so what benefited me also benefited the larger group.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Definitely.
And that was the thinking. And again, people might think it's a simple, simple thing. But for us who have this disability, it really is a problem. A simple thing like a yellow post-it.
And some of these techniques are also useful for psychiatric survivors as well, because some of them can be light sensitive. Some of them are also color sensitive. So these things are very, very important.
Yes. So like what also came across in the workspace, because I am neurodivergent, I kind of know how to spot it in others.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know they are, but I kind of know what to look for because I have the experience. So a simple thing like, say we're going to rearrange the office or you're going to change a procedure in the office, right? A neurotypical person, you could probably tell them this morning, we're going to change something this afternoon and they'll be fine, right? No big deal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If the member of staff is on the spectrum, that is a huge, massive deal that will disrupt their entire day, because they require more time to process. So what I had to do, I remember there was one particular member of staff and we were rearranging the office to try to get more space for everyone. And because I saw some signs in her, I knew, listen, I need to tell her a week in advance. And every day I would check in with her to see how she feels about it. So like, let's say I did that the Monday, by the time the Friday morning, she was first in the office and she ready for the change.
Okay, nice.
You know, but it had to happen immediately because you told me this change coming. I prepared for the change, but the change needs to happen. Do not put this off for the Monday. It has to happen today, though.
Right.
And just learning how to work with people in that way.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So, Rhea, do you think that being a woman has impacted or changed the perception of you with, you know, having the neurodivergent?
I would say yes, from a cultural point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So before, when I was masking, I would be very, which was totally against my personality.
Mm-hmm.
Idea that women are more docile. We don't really speak up. We endure certain things that culturally is kind of accepted for us to endure. I found that when I fully understood what was going on inside of me, when I started to understand how my brain works and I allowed myself to be my true self, I'm now, those norms won't apply to me anymore.
Okay, cool.
if that makes sense. I don't know how to relate to being docile anymore. I don't know how to relate to not being honest and truthful. I don't try to read the social cues anymore, because that is one of the challenges for people on the spectrum. Saying the right thing, we don't really understand when people are being dishonest. You know, how to pick up certain cues as it relates to your personal safety. Not really understanding sometimes when a person is a threat to you. And I found that the more authentic I am in myself, it has become easier for me to pick up on those things. If that makes sense.
Yes, understood, understood. Yeah. So how do you feel now after being diagnosed, learning more about your neurodivergence and making the adjustments? How do you feel now after all these experiences? And what would you consider as some of your major strengths to help keep you alive and keep you sane and moving forward?
So you see, you asked me that question and my brain did a dyslexic thing. It totally shut down. The wall just immediately went up. This is why, for one of those reasons, dyslexics have extra hours in exams. Sometimes the mental block comes out and we just can't get around it. Okay, so one of the techniques to get around that is to breathe and sort of relax the brain to be able to answer your question in this moment. Right? Okay. So the question was, how do I feel now?
Yes.
Well, I feel great now. And that is mostly because I've overcome a lot of challenges. I've been in spaces where they said I didn't really belong initially. You know, I have 6 degrees now. I have 3 masters.
What are the areas?
So the first one is in a Masters of Science in International Relations. Then I did a MBA focusing on marketing. And about 2 years ago, I finished a master's in international human rights law. Yeah, my family has a legal background. So that also made it challenging a bit because, you know, everyone in the family are lawyers. And why are you giving so much trouble in school? And why can't you spell certain words, you know? That was a trying. But yeah, I also feel now that I'm more able to advocate for others. I have a great concern that a lot of people are suffering and they don't know because they are not diagnosed.
Right.
Because what we found is that, you know, that weird aunt or that weird uncle or that cousin that every time people are around is going to hide in the room. We think culturally that that's just a quirk. If you investigate it, it is probably somebody who has autism in the family and we've always had it and they were never diagnosed. So they never fully understood what is happening with them or why they were behaving in certain ways. That's where that breaking the silence of knowing to be diagnosed, wanting to be diagnosed, how your family are going to accept that, because nobody wants to hear that their child or family member has an intellectual disability, right? At least with physical disabilities, I can see there's an issue. And most times, the invisible ones, there's a lot more proven to prove.
Understood. Yes.
You know, because they don't really see it. And what I've also been trying to do is to come out of my shell a little bit more, because I really do prefer to be alone. It's just quieter and for everything in my being. But to mentor or be a sort of psychological support for other persons, especially those who are neurodiverse and have decided to jump into academia or postgraduate school. I know what they've been through. I know what they're dealing with to a large extent, and just sort of providing that emotional and psychological support as they go through that process.
Okay, wonderful. And as you mentioned, your level of family support, did you receive after being diagnosed as being neurodivergent?
Well, little to none, because I was diagnosed late in life at almost 28. By that time, I was married for 4 years. So my direct family, there was little to no support. If I'm honest, I don't think my mom has since died. But she came to a sort of understanding before she died. I don't think my father still believes, you know, especially since I have so many degrees. I think he's like, sure. And that is why it's important to get diagnosed. It's very important to get diagnosed so that you have this document, you have this professional that says, no, is really happening. So support from the family, not so much. Support from general community, not so much. What I would say is that I get a lot of support from outside of the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the benefits of COVID for me was that everything was online, right? Which was great for me because I didn't have to interact with people because that's a challenge, right?
Right.
But a lot of the courses in the United Kingdom and in the US were now available online. So I was able to find communities, especially in countries like the UK.
Yes.
Are much more advanced in terms of their neurodiversity policies, their programs, the support that they offer. I was able to find community there.
Mm-hmm.
But people that understood. I don't have to explain some of my behaviors as much as I do with them, as I'd have to do in the Caribbean.
Right. So if you had the opportunity to speak to policymakers in Trinidad and Tobago about making the society more inclusive, the educational system, the healthcare system, what would you say to them?
But here's the thing, in terms of resources, we have very few persons in the region who can diagnose neurodiversity to begin with. And most of them deal with children, so persons under the age of 16. So I have friends who actually have to wait 3-4 months to get one consult with one of these professionals, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for sure, we definitely need more human resources and people skilled to be able to diagnose properly persons who may be neurodiverse, whether it's ADHD, whether it's autism, Tourette's, the whole spectrum of things. That's the first thing. The second thing is, well, each country is different, but in Trinidad and Tobago, we have school psychologists, we have special needs programs, but I think they're using that inaccurate representation, for lack of a better word, that people who are neurodiverse are somehow intellectually slower or intellectually inferior. And they've designed a lot of the programs with that in mind, that you have to slow things down for us. Where in my case, you had to actually speed things up for me. Because again, I think abstractly, so the more complicated you explain it, the easier it is for me to understand.
Mm-hmm.
If you break it down too small for me, I don't know what you're trying to tell me because I cannot see the big picture.
Right.
Right? So how do we change the curriculum, or how do we tweak the curriculum to factor in the person who, listen, they can't take the small bites, which is how we design the system. They need the big bite first. And then they can start to break it down into smaller pieces. So that's for sure. In terms of the homes, family, I'm not sure, you know, because in the Caribbean, we still have an idea that we have to rebuke negative things. If you know what I'm saying, like if you have cancer, let's go and pray, let's rebuke that. And the idea of seeking alternative sources of information, or yeah, let's pray, but let's also go to the doctor.
Of course.
What the medications are, you know? I think in some parts of the region, we still haven't found a nice balance or a nice marriage between our religious beliefs and integrating the science and integrating the new knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be a challenge for some families, but the resistance is still strong today. I have a lot of friends who teach in primary school. And again, because they know me, I speak about my experiences. And they say, no, I have a child in the class that does X, Y, and Z. And sometimes they ask me, like, how best to approach the parent. And a lot of time when they approach the parent absolutely refuses to acknowledge that the child may have a disability, an intellectual disability.
Yes, yes. So, Rhea, as we get ready to wrap up, what do you do for fun?
Oh, me? Well, I live in Tobago, so I have beaches all around me. I love to walk in nature. Again, that's me liking to be alone. So I do that a lot. I also decided that my background has mostly been academic. So within the last 4 years, I've focused totally on being a creative. So I've studied fashion design. I've studied jewelry making. I've learned to make my own clothes. I'm doing storytelling right now, short stories. So for me, that is fun. My brain needs to always be learning something. Learning something is fun. Which is also kind of interesting because you would think people who may have intellectual disabilities may avoid learning. because it may be a challenge, but for me, I think at this point in my life, I've embraced it. Yeah. And it's kind of fun to figure out ways around it.
I mean, for each of us, I think we all find a way to learn. We want to learn, so we find a way, if not the traditional way, we find another informal, unconventional way to learn. So yes, that's what we do in the Caribbean, especially.
Yes.
So Rhea, I want to thank you so much for sharing a bit about yourself and allowing others to also gain strength from your own experiences and be motivated by some of what you have done and are still doing. So thank you so much for being that strong self-advocate and representing.
Thank you again for having me.
You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudley Wickham-Ashby, and my very special guest, Rhea Correa Tony from Trinidad and Tobago. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660 or 1-246-430-7300. You can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com, and you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. So remember, love yourself, love your neighbor just as much as you love yourself. So until next week, ciao!